Moody Radio's Spring Share event has come and gone, but there's still more work to be done. This year, we want to be bold for the gospel in encouraging, teaching, and empowering you, our listener. To do this, we need your help. See our impact and learn more about Moody Radio's new initiative at springshare.org.
All of your relationships with spouse, family, and friends are important, but temporary. Your only eternal relationship is with God. Hi, I'm Rob West. We need the bonds of family and friends to help us thrive in this world, but they pale to the significance of your relationship with the Lord. Today, I'll give some practical ways you can draw closer to God. And then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, I know what you're thinking. What's my relationship with God have to do with finances? Because this is a show about money, right? Yes, but it's also about our faith. And for Christians, faith and our finances have everything to do with our relationship with God. And the Bible gives us three principles to connect the dots. First, God created everything, and therefore He owns everything. Colossians 1:16 reads, "For by Him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through Him and for Him." Second, God gave us everything we possess. James 1:17 tells us, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change." So, God owns everything, but He's given us resources to use temporarily as His stewards. Last, God is not distant and detached. He wants a close relationship with you. James 4:8 reads, "Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you." We draw near to God by obediently following His law. With over 2,300 verses in Scripture about money and possessions, God has made His desire quite clear. He wants us to manage money according to His principles. Our friend Howard Dayton points out that wisely managing money and the other resources God has blessed us with deepens our fellowship with Christ. Having a close relationship with Jesus is another way to describe what the Bible calls true riches. In Luke 16:11, Jesus indicates that God uses money as a test. He says, "If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches?" Jesus is saying that how you handle money affects your spiritual life. If you manage it well, according to biblical principles, you'll naturally grow closer to Christ. If not, your fellowship with the Lord suffers. So, biblical money management is a very practical way to improve your spiritual life. But sometimes things get in the way of that. There are two kinds of disobedience that keep us from handling money God's way and growing closer to Him. The first is passive. It's just plain laziness. Some people don't want to take the time to organize their finances, make a budget, and track their spending. Doing those things might only take a few hours a month. Still, it's just too much to bother with. Worse, that same person will spend more time than that watching TV every night. As a result, intimacy with God suffers. Another person has a different obstacle to growing closer to God. It's an active or willful disobedience. For that person, money and possessions compete with Christ. Jesus tells us clearly how that will turn out. In Matthew 6:24, He says, "No one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." Then there are people who think they can surrender every part of their lives to Christ except money. They might be quite good at making money, paying their bills on time, saving and investing, but they refuse to give Christ lordship over their finances, to follow all of the Bible's teachings. Maybe they stumble over tithing or other giving to God's kingdom. They have the resources, but they don't want to do it. Again, their intimacy with Christ suffers. Finally, there's the person who's not following biblical financial principles, but thinks his relationship with the Lord is just fine. To him, we might say, what you don't know will hurt you. What are you missing out on? You might think finances aren't interfering with your relationship with God, but how would you know? If that's you, perhaps you should commit to the Lord in earnest prayer and then follow through managing your money and possessions His way. You'll find what you need to get started by downloading the free FaithFi app. It will not only give you 3 ways to set up your budget based on the envelope system, it also has the best Christian financial content out there to help you grow closer to God by following His principles. Do that for 3 months and see if your relationship with the Lord is more intimate. We'll be right back. So what does your money have to do with your faith? Well, that's where we started today. You see, all behavior is the product of what we choose to think or believe. So when we change our behavior, well, that ultimately happens by changing what we believe. Because unless we change what we believe and therefore think, we'll never produce any lasting results. You know, think about the 12 spies Moses sent into the promised land. You'll remember 10 returned, terrified of, quote, giants, while Joshua and Caleb said, we must go up and take possession of the land because we can certainly conquer it. What was the difference between the 10 and the 2? Well, the difference was perspective. You see, 10 believed in the strength of the opponent, 2 believed in the strength of God. When we change our belief system and our perspective, it ultimately allows us to change how we make decisions day to day. And that's certainly true in this area of finance. When we're rooted in biblical truth with an eternal perspective, understanding our proper role and the role of money according to a biblical worldview, well, it changes everything about how we go about each day and handle God's money. And that's what we want to encourage you to do on this program each day. We're so glad you're along with us. We're taking your calls and questions today at 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open, 800-525-7000. If you have a testimony you'd like to share with us today about God's activity in your life as you've applied these principles, perhaps over decades, maybe you've been listening all the way back since the late Larry Burkett, who we hear his name still often, even though the Lord took him home in 2003, you'd love to give testimony to that, well, give us a call, 800-525-7000. Let's begin in West Palm Beach, Florida, just north of where I was born. Marie, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, my question is that I have a $42,000 balance on my mortgage. The interest rate is only 4.25. And they say my maturity date is 2033. So I wanted to know if it's wise for me to take that money out of my 401k, which I have available, to pay off the mortgage and replace that money within 5 years, or should I just send extra with my mortgage and pay it off in 5 years?
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to replace that money in your 401k because the only way you can do that is through salary deferral, unless you're saying that you just continue deferring a portion of your salary in there to replenish, I guess, what you took out. You could do that. The reason I would probably avoid doing this is because really the benefit of that 401k is to keep that money in there and let it grow on a tax-deferred basis. Now, I'm all about, Marie, you paying off that mortgage because I'd love for you to be debt-free and enjoy the freedom and flexibility that comes from being unencumbered. But let me ask you this. How far away are you from retirement at this point?
Probably another 10, 15 years. Not 50 yet.
Okay, very good. And so you have $42,000 left, but it's still 10 years away from paying it off if you continue on the current track. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So in the current trajectory, the current plan, it has you paying off this mortgage about the time you might be considering entering retirement. Now, I realize things can change between now and 10 years. So obviously, we'll have to be flexible there. But at least at a high level, we think these two things will line up. I think that makes a lot of sense. Unless you have just a real conviction from the Lord of being completely out of debt, and if you do, I certainly understand that, and I would say go for it. But if you're comfortable with this debt hanging around until retirement, I kind of like the idea that any prepayment of this mortgage would come out of current cash flow. And what that simply means is you'd continue to live modestly, living below your means, so you have a surplus, and that surplus could go to your mortgage. So let's say you had a goal of sending maybe one extra payment a year. Well, that would cut down that 10 years to maybe 8 years. And that would be great because now a couple of years before retirement, that mortgage is gone. And then you're entering retirement a couple of years later and that biggest expense in your financial life has been taken off the table. And that means that you just need less in the way of income to cover your obligations. That feels good to me because then we can preserve everything you have in your 401k today, and we're not selling out of any of the investments, especially in a market like we're in today where stock prices are down because we've gone through a difficult season coming off of the pandemic and all of this easy money, and we've got sky-high inflation and interest rates shot up, and now we're looking at a possible recession. All of that has put pressure on the market, and that's brought the value of your account down. Well, that's considered an unrealized loss until you sell something, which is what would have to happen for you to take anything out. And so now you're going to miss the recovery of that portfolio. And given the fact that time is still on your side, 10 years plus away from retirement, maybe even as much as 15, I'd love for that money to be able to recover and then grow to new highs so that you've got a nice nest egg available to supplement Social Security in retirement. And without doing anything, you're going to have that mortgage paid off by the time you retire. And we could even shorten that payback period from 10 years to maybe 8 if you could figure out how to pay maybe an extra payment a year out of your current cash flow. So that would be my best recommendation, except if you just really had a conviction that you wanted to be out of debt as soon as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I wanted to save on the interest too. That's why.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think you'll benefit more. I mean, you know, it's 4.5. I mean, that's a good rate. It's better than anything you could get today. You know, there's some people that have mortgages in the 2s right now. So I realize it's not as good as it could be, but it's still a very attractive rate. And I think what you'll benefit from in the growth of your 401k will outpace that. And you can have the best of both worlds, being debt-free in retirement and having a nice nest egg to fall back on if you just keep going the way you are. So thanks for calling today, Marie. Hey, by the way, look for some other ways to reduce that mortgage along the way. For instance, if you get a tax refund this year, a little bigger than you expected, maybe that's a way to drop $1,000 or $2,000, you know, on that mortgage. Anything you can do will help to save interest over the life of that loan. Thanks for being a part of the program today. Hey, we've got a few lines open, perhaps one for the question you've been thinking about at 800-525-7000. Let's head to Marshall, Texas. Thurston, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I have a flexible adjustable life insurance with extended guarantee, optional index feature, paying about $170 a month. And I heard in your program somebody called in, wanted to call to find out after I called one company, they said, well, it's not good right now to do it because of the market and inflation. So my question, sir, do you know any companies, I guess that was similar to like Coventry Direct, that I could cash in and reduce the payment for the life insurance and pocket some of the money, or is that wise?
Yeah. So what you would be looking to do is pull the cash value out, replace this death benefit with a term policy, and then invest the difference. Is that what you're considering?
Yes, sir. I don't think I need to pay $166 a month for life insurance if I can reduce it and get some cash or restructure it, or if that's wise to.
Yeah, I mean, I typically like term insurance. You don't want to cancel this until you have something to replace it with, but that adjustable life is basically a hybrid of term and whole life. It allows you to adjust the period of protection, the face amount, and the premiums at your will, and then it has a cash value that earns interest at a guaranteed rate, but those are usually modest. I'd rather you have the ability to grow that fully, even though you're taking on some risk. I'd rather you do that in the stock market. So I'd reach out to a life insurance agent who's independent, who could shop this around, or you could use, you know, one of the online tools like SelectQuote to find a term policy that's equal or higher in death benefit. You probably need 10 to 12 times your income. That's pure insurance. Then take the cash value and invest that for a better return long term. We'll be right back. Stay with us on Faith and Finance Live. Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. You know, it's a big week next week. That's right. Spring Share is just around the corner. Bold for the Gospel. We're so excited to tell the story of Moody Radio and invite you, our faithful listeners, to support our great work. And if what you hear on Moody Radio is making a difference in your life, and perhaps you've never given to Moody Radio before, I'd like to invite you to do that today. As a first-time donor to Moody Radio, and as our thank you, we're going to send you a copy of the book Know Your Bible, a Moody Scripture Calendar, a special edition of Today in the Word devotional, and a free Moody Enrich online course. We're delighted to be able to send you that as our gift, and we'd love for you to make a pre-share gift even now, and you can do that online at moodyradio.org. You'll see a bold for the Gospel banner right there on the homepage and a button that says Give Now, or you can simply call if that's easier. The number to call is 800-600-9624. It's Moody Radio Spring Share next week, but you can give right now. Again, moodyradio.org or 800-600-9624. It's a huge encouragement when we have folks come in early and start their giving to our Spring Share. So when we kick off next week, we're already starting with some wind in our sails, and we're excited to be able to celebrate what God is doing as lives are being changed literally around the globe through this incredible ministry. And you're a part of that. We want to say thanks in advance. All right, let's head to the phones. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. If you have a question for our program today, we're going to head to Fort Payne, Alabama. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. About 13 years ago, my wife and I got custody of my great nieces. The oldest was fixing to be six. The youngest was fixing to be one. The six-year-old now is 19. Fixing to go into the military, and was looking at ways of creating a better, you know, the I'm pulling over right now. She's looking for ways to create a credit rating for herself.
Okay.
And we bought a car to get her better gas mileage, to get her back and forth to military training, things like that. Her name is primary, so she's getting credit for that. Yep. My wife is secondary, so that she can get a better rate at the bank. She's on her insurance as primary driver, so that helps. So what are we missing that could help her out?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. Number one is I would just be careful about co-signing. The Bible's pretty clear not to do it. Not in a husband-wife situation, but in every other situation. And the reason is the borrower becomes a lender slave, and despite her best efforts and desires to be able to make that payment, if she's unable to, obviously you all are going to have to step in. That could provide some relational damage, and if you don't on a timely basis, it's going to damage both of your credit. So just be aware of that, Mike, and you're probably going into that with your eyes wide open, but I at least wanted to call it out. I love the idea that you're thinking about building her credit. You certainly need to do that. And when you're just starting out, it's not a matter of having bad credit. It's a lack of credit that hurts you, which can keep your score down in the same way. So yes, this car loan in her name, if she's an on-time payer every month, will be reported to her report. You're right. That will help. Beyond that, a couple of thoughts. Number one is you could add her. Some people do this. As an authorized user on one of your credit cards. You don't even have to give her the card. And maybe the understanding is she's not able to use it. But as an authorized user, your credit history would be reported for that account to her report as well.
And the same is true, though, if you had a missed payment. So if you had a late payment that was more than 30 days and that, you know, dinged your credit, it would ding hers, too. So you just need to be aware of that. But as long as you're paying on time and that doesn't concern you, that's one way to start to build her credit. The other is what's called a secured credit card. So she could put $200 or $300 on a credit card or, excuse me, down on deposit at the bank. They would issue a card against it with a limit up to the amount on deposit, because that's the collateral, so they have no risk. And then basically she would just set up an automatic recurring charge for a budgeted item. So something she's already planning on paying. Maybe it's a, you know, a media streaming service that she subscribes to. She's already planning on spending that money. Instead of, you know, it being going on her debit card, it goes on this secured credit card. She pays it off in full every month. And that good credit history is being reported to her credit report. I think having different types of credit is key. And you would have with a revolving and an installment loan. Installment is the credit card loan. Revolving is the credit card. That would be good. You want a good credit mix, but you also want low credit utilization, which would be the case here with this secured card, meaning let's say they give her a limit of $300 and she's only charging $12.95 a month and then paying it off. Obviously, the credit utilization is very low. That's a good thing. And then the most important thing is that she's an on-time payer every month. So those are a couple of other ideas. Is that helpful?
Yeah, she's going to be going to basic training and AIT, so she's going to be gone for almost 9 months as soon as she gets her ship date. So if we do a secured card and her payroll goes onto that secured card and she pays her car payment out of that secured card, is that double dipping? Is that going to be good? Or is that something we need to just keep separate?
Well, her payroll is not going to go onto that card. So this would think of this like a credit card. So the direct deposit for income would go into, let's say, a checking account. And then she would just have to have a way, if she's allowed to pay the car payment with a credit card, she certainly could, and then pay it off. And that would be one way to go. The key is just to make sure that she has some timely payments going to that credit card to pay it off each month so there's no interest, but also so that she's collecting that good payment history.
Okay, that's good. That's exactly what we needed to know.
All right, very good, Mike. And then that authorized user approach is another way to go, where you guys would add her as an authorized user, perhaps to one of your more active accounts that you're already using. So then she just automatically inherits your good credit as a part of that process. That's one other way to go. Tell her thanks for her service. We're delighted to hear that, and we appreciate your call today, my friend. It looks like we have one line open at 800-525-7000. You know, when it comes to managing God's money wisely, we want to be really careful about the use of debt. It can allow us to spend beyond God's provision. That's not something we want to do. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your testimony and calls. And a little later in the broadcast, our friend Jerry Boyer stops by. We'll be right back on Faith and Finance Live. Stay with us. Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, your host. All right, let's head back to the phones. We're going to go to Norton, Ohio. Hi, Jamie. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely.
So my question is concerning a thrift savings plan. I'm a federal employee.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that for 25 years now and been fortunate enough where I'm going to be getting close to 50 years old here, God willing, in another year and a half. And I'm learning about these catch-up contributions. When you turn 50, I think you're allowed up to $30,000 a year.
That's
and
right.
My question is, should I be putting a high value on this as another aspect? As I'm kind of leaning in closer to retirement. I can retire at 57, so I would have at least 7 years of that maximum contribution. And I'm just wondering, I've never really started looking at that until, you know, obviously I'm getting close to being 50 now. I'm just curious, kind of a two-part question, just your basic opinion on what you guys think of catch-up contributions. And then kind of how do I determine what I think is a reasonable amount to increase?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think for both parts of that question, it starts with planning, Jamie, and really having a good handle on what is my ultimate savings goal for retirement. You know, what do I need to have to maintain whatever lifestyle God has called me to? So, you know, you've established a lifestyle to this point, assuming you're going to maintain that. Typically in retirement, we live on 70 to 80% of that. The kids are off the payroll. Maybe the house is paid off. We're no longer saving for retirement. So all that money that, you know, we're deferring into the TSP is now, you know, that's money we don't have to plan for on a monthly basis because we're already in retirement now, so we're no longer saving for it. And all of those things together, plus maybe less commute and work clothes and that kind of thing, you know, has us living on 70 to 80%. So I think the next step is to say, okay, how am I doing in order, in terms of building up enough in the way of retirement assets so that I can generate what I need when I supplement Social Security to ultimately solve for the monthly expenses that I'll have? And you're either on track, ahead, or behind. Now, the reason the catch-up provision exists at age 50 and beyond is because most folks are behind when they do that calculation. And so this gives them a window of time between 50, age 50, and when they retire to put in, you know, a good bit more money. As you said, from $22,500, the 2023 contribution limit, to $30,000 if you are over age 50. So I would do some planning. And if you haven't done that, perhaps you'd engage with a certified Kingdom advisor there in Ohio. You can find one on our website at faithfi.com. Just click find a CKA and just engage that individual for an hourly planning session just to do retirement planning. And that will tell you whether you need to take advantage of it. I mean, it's great if you need it, but you don't want to necessarily overaccumulate either, because you may have things you want to do right now, additional giving or, you know, whatever it might be. And so that's why we need to define this financial finish line. But if you're like most folks and you get to the end of that planning process and you say, well, I'm a little bit behind, then taking advantage of the ability to put away an extra $7,500 a year between now and retirement is going to be really helpful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Do we have a second for a testimony real quick?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So I'm fortunate enough, I got to go through the financial freedom course at our church several years back, probably 8-10 years ago. And that really set us on a trajectory of, you know, just understanding God's wisdom for, you know, not only our lives, but our finances. And really, it's such an undervalued part of our Christian walk that I'm just thankful that I was able to do that and realize that you don't give our money to our church tithe and see how you can go from basically, you know, terrible finances, and then you're actually giving more money to church and God is blessing you in other ways. So I'm just really thankful for my career and thankful for God.
Well, and you took the step early on, Jamie, to really learn God's way of handling money, which, you know, is not what the world teaches. You know, the world's system of money management is based on spending all that you can, and the idea of discontentment, so that we need to respond by trying to buy bigger and better and newer because it's going to provide some sort of satisfaction or fulfillment. You know, it's built on greed and even fear. And, you know, that obviously is not God's way of handling things. You know, our identity is not in our money. It's not an end. It's a means to an end. And that end is most powerful when it's something other than us, our ability to be generous and provide for our families and all of the things that we see in a biblical worldview of money management, where our identity is rooted in Christ as our creator and provider and sustainer. And now money's a tool to accomplish his purposes. And then there's these principles that you've been living out in your financial life that allow us to live with freedom and contentment. And you're giving testimony to that today. So listen, God bless you. Thanks for sharing that. That's an encouragement, I know, to those that are out there that are saying, man, I really want that. Well, the way you get that is to go back to God's word and really renew your mind with a biblical perspective focused on the eternal, not the temporal. God bless you, Jamie. Thanks for being on the program today. To Chicago. Hi, Julie. Go right ahead.
Hi there. So thank you so much for this ministry. We love it. Love listening to it. My situation with my husband is that we have for a long time used the envelope system. And so we have checking and then we have savings. So for money that we don't need ready access to, we have just got some virtual envelopes and put them in our savings. So we are now at the point now where our savings is just crossed over 100,000. We have a 403B. We have no credit card debt, no car debt. we're giving. We have maybe 150 or so in our home and mortgage. So we're just thinking, you know, besides having money accessible for stuff like vacation, our emergency fund, different envelopes that we have, there is some money, you know, maybe 30 or 40 grand or more of that, that is just in our savings now that maybe we were thinking we could use, maybe set up a short-term investment or something. So we're just looking for your advice on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is a great opportunity, Julie, as you all have really applied these principles from God's word, and you're in a really strong financial position with clearly some surpluses, for you all to take a step back and just say, you know, what are our values and our priorities as believers? Where is God taking us? What does he want to do in our life? What do we want to be known for, just in terms of how we're ordering our lifestyle and perhaps living simply and investing in other people and relationships, and yes, saving for the future and putting this money to work? Because if you have the gift of making money, there's just, you know, more resources that you can do more good with. So that's, you know, I think it's just a matter of you all really clarifying to make sure that you've defined enough so you know ultimately what are your accumulation goals, so that if you're on track to reach those, now all of a sudden you say, well, Lord, I want to hold this loosely, and how might you direct me toward greater generosity? To the extent you're looking to still accumulate and build wealth, I think you could look beyond, you know, the asset classes of stocks and bonds and cash toward perhaps real estate. That would be another option for you to consider. Precious metals would be another option. So you can look at diversifying among asset classes as another opportunity to be able to consider as you, you know, grow what God has entrusted to you. But don't miss the planning side of it, where you take a step back and just take maybe even a couple of weeks, and just you and your husband, maybe separately and then coming together, pray and say, Lord, give us a vision for where you're taking us and how you want us to use your money, because it's all his, for your purposes. Part of that is saving for the future and being prudent. Part of that is being lavishly generous with whatever the Lord leads you to. I'm excited as you explore that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Grateful you've joined us today for Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Let's head back to the phones. Lowell, Indiana. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, in the past, I have transferred money from one institute. It's an IRA. I've transferred, and it's a Roth IRA. I've transferred money from one institution to the other, but I've never had to do the paperwork. The institutions have handled the paperwork. Now I've run across...
Uh-oh. Looks like we lost Rachel there. Let me, hopefully you can still hear us, Rachel, even though the line dropped. You know, the only way to do a transfer is with a direct rollover. In some cases, the advisor, if you're using an advisor that's receiving that rollover, will fill out that paperwork for you, essentially, to initiate that rollover. Often you will need to do it yourself. So I think the key is, so long as you've established that IRA at the new institution where you want that money to go, then you would just request the rollover paperwork. Basically, you would indicate what that institution's name is and the routing number and the account number. It would go back office to back office through what's called the ACAT system. And, you know, that money would be deposited in the new institution in the account that's already opened, that's titled the same way, your name, comma, IRA. And that would just initiate that process. And it's not taxable at that point because you're not taking a distribution. It's just being rolled to a new institution. Whether or not they initiate that and do the paperwork on their end or you do it yourself, it's the same process. So I would just ask, as long as that account's been open, I would ask your current custodian for assistance with completing that. They'll provide you the documentation, either electronic or paper document that you'll complete, and then turn that back in, and that should initiate it. So if I understood the question correctly, that should get you going in the right direction. And we appreciate your call today. If there was something else you wanted to know, feel free to give us a call back. Let's see. The Villages, Florida. Brenda, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Rob, sure. I appreciate, love your program. We live in the Villages. We feel like we're on a vacation every day. We have $300,000 in our 401k. We have $480,000 in an annuity that's coming up due in the fall. Our mortgage is $50,000 on our home here and at 2.85% interest. We live on Social Security, and my husband owns farm ground, which is about $30,000 a year income from that. And wondered what we should do with that money that's coming due in October. We do have a financial planner, and he's kind of talking real estate, but I'm kind of not sure in this situation with our country that's in.
Sure. And the portion that's coming due, is that the annuity or something else?
Yes. Yes, the annuity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And how has that annuity been growing? Has that been, is that a fixed annuity or a variable or index?
It's been
annuity?
A fixed. It's been a okay. fixed at 4%. And okay. we've had it in there for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is your desire with this money? I mean, are you wanting to keep that in a really stable environment and try to roll it over into a new fixed
really
annuity at higher rates?
Well, I'm not really sure what to do with that. We live comfortably. We always live below our means. We live comfortably on Social Security and the farm income. I don't know if we should pay our home off just for that security. We're okay every month. We go on vacation. We do what we want to do. So
you really haven't been taking anything out of the $700,000 between the 401k and the annuity?
Yeah, we do. We take $1,500 a month out to pay for our house payment, our insurance, taxes, all that has to do with this house.
And where does that come from?
That comes from the 401k.
From the 401k. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is even at $300,000, I mean, I would say that, you know, we ought to be looking at taking 4% a year. That'd be $1,000 a month. Obviously, you're taking more than that. So you're taking, you know, about 6% out. So it's a little higher than I would typically expect, although you've got this annuity that's been growing and you're not touching that. So really, in the aggregate, you know, you have $700,000 and 4% of that would be $28,000. And you're certainly not taking $2,300 a month. So I think you're in a great spot here because you don't need this money and this money can just continue to grow. And you've got roughly, you know, a little less than half of it at the risk of the market in the 401k, which you could roll out to an IRA. I think if you wanted to stay on the most conservative end of the risk spectrum, you could just do a new fixed annuity and take advantage of higher rates because they're higher than what, you know, the one that you had that you got 5 years ago. But I'd probably sit with an advisor who can look at all of this. I mean, you're in a great spot here, Brenda, with plenty of assets. You've got good income that's, you know, you can depend on. You guys are living modestly. It sounds like you're just enjoying not only where you live, but doing some traveling. That's great. But I think as you lean into this with an advisor, what you could do would be one of two things. You could just take this money, pay off the mortgage, which further reduces your expenses, and then just invest the whole thing. You could roll that annuity that's coming due into the IRA if that's pre-tax money, and then roll the 401k out so you'd have a new, you know, one portfolio with $650,000 after you paid off the house. Or you could roll that, you know, annuity portion into another annuity at a little bit higher fixed rate without any risk, and then, you know, just continue drawing from the 401k, which I would probably roll out to an IRA. But I think in either case, I'd get some wise counsel from an advisor who could look at the whole thing, advise you on that new annuity if that's what you want, or take responsibility for the whole thing and manage the $650 after you pay off the house. Does that make sense?
It does. I appreciate that. And so at our age of, I've always lived below our means, and I'm like, you know, I'm planning on living until we're 90. I've had cancer twice and the Lord's blessed us, and I'm living until I'm 90. So I want to make sure, is that going to be enough money for us to live and live like we've always been used to, just doing what we want? It doesn't
have
a huge portfolio, but it's great.
Sure. Is the farm income passive income, or does that take some effort on your husband's part to keep that going?
No, doesn't take any effort at all.
Okay, so that could continue into perpetuity for all intents and purposes, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, you all have, for the most part, you have guaranteed income that's covering more than your lifestyle. So if you were to say, Rob, if our income is covered, apart from $1,500 a month for a mortgage, but you would now pay it off because you'd take the $50,000 and pay off the mortgage. Now you got $650 left. What would your expenses be? What would you need to pull from the 401k at that point if the mortgage was gone?
If the mortgage was gone. Not very much. I mean, with Social Security and the farm income,
you're pretty much
there. We'd be good.
Okay. So then you're saying, well, my bills are covered. We are living modestly, but within our lifestyle that we feel like God has called us to, we're traveling and enjoying life. And on top of that, we've got $650,000 that we don't need. Is that going to last us the rest of our lives? Absolutely. I mean, ultimately our trust is in the Lord. Could it all be reduced to rubble? Yes. But at the same time, you've done everything you can possibly do and you've got plenty of assets way beyond what your need is. So yeah, you guys are in great shape. So I think if it were me, I'd probably certainly pay off the mortgage and get your expenses down, where your passive farm income plus Social Security covers everything. And then I would either turn the $650 over to an advisor to manage very conservatively, or I'd roll that into a new fixed annuity if that gives you more peace of mind, and then consider an advisor managing the 401k. But yeah, you're in great shape.
All right. And the fixed annuity, is 5 years like a minimum thing, or is there different ones?
There is different.
While we were still working.
Right. No, I think that's probably the right length. And there are different lengths, but I think, that would be typical.
Okay. I appreciate you.
All right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Brenda, if you need an advisor, you could head to our website, faithfi.com, and click find a CKA. Thanks for calling today. All right. Hey, it's Friday, which means Jerry Boyer checks in with us. Jerry is our resident economist. He's a columnist at World Opinions. He's president of Boyer Research. And Jerry, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon. That was a great call. If we were a country filled with Brendas,
would things be in good shape, huh?
So much better.
If only we were a country of Brendas. That's so true.
Yeah.
and maybe our nation's leaders could learn a few things from Brenda with regard to how to operate fiscally at the same time.
I agree. Brenda and Mr. Brenda, whoever he is, they're doing it right.
That's exactly right. Well, Jerry, in that regard, I know you're going to give us a quick update on what's going on with corporate engagement in this earnings season and as these shareholder meetings are cranking up. But before we do, give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what's happening economically.
Well, the big news today obviously was the employment report. That almost always moves markets. And it's consistent with the major themes of the week. The other big news is Chairman Powell gave testimony before the Banking Committee, as he is legally required to do. And you could just see the way, the thinking is going on, which is, well, the economy is doing better than expected, so we got to do something about that.
That's
the Phillips curve. That's Keynesian economics. The economy is growing faster than expected in January, so we better slow it down because they think the way to solve inflation is to slow the economy down. I know that I've said that every week, and one of the reasons I repeat it so often is because I meet people who think, no, that can't possibly be true. No one could can believe that. Read the testimony. That's what they believe. Look it up on Wikipedia, Phillips curve. That's their way of thinking. So when you have good economic news, like a good the jobs market, or when you have manufacturer surveys, et cetera, doing better than expected, markets say, okay, the Fed's going to try to slow it down. They're going to hit the brakes. And that's why markets went down this week, including today on good market news.
That's great. Well, it's a great,
helpful music.
Overview. You do, because it's not you, it's me. I went too long and we're out of time. So we're going to hold the corporate engagement update to next week. You have a great weekend, my friend. Thanks for stopping by.
You too.
God bless. All right. Faith and Finance is a partnership between Moody Radio and Faith Fi. Thank you to Charles, Dan, Amy, and Jim. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week on Monday. Bye-bye.
Moody Radio's Spring Share event has come and gone, but there's still more work to be done. This year, we want to be bold for the gospel in encouraging, teaching, and empowering you, our listener. To do this, we need your help. See our impact and
Learn more about Moody Radio's new initiative at springshare.org.